Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Tech Connect podcast. I'm John Martin.
And I'm Dean Reverman.
Printers. Printers is our topic of the day.
Yes.
I know most people think of a printer as like, well, it's just that thing that spits out paper or a label or something. And
okay, it's useful that way.
Whatever.
Right?
It's just a printer, right? Why do we need to talk about printers?
Oh, no, we need to talk about
it. There's a lot to talk about.
Oh, yes, we do.
So we have a couple guests with us from Zebra today.
Yep.
Leo Lowy and Christine Weber. They're going to talk to us a little bit about the world of printers.
Yep.
Explain a little bit about the security side of
security.
Things.
Security. Critical.
As well as the supply side.
Supplies, opportunities.
Huge opportunity for our resellers, yes.
Bingo.
So it is time for us to plug in and get connected.
Welcome to the Tech Connect Podcast. It's time to get connected.
All right, as I mentioned, we have two fantastic guests from Zebra. First up, we have Leo Lowy. Leo is the Director of Software Product Management at Zebra and also an expert in all things printer security. Leo, welcome to the podcast. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Oh, great. Thanks for having us today. So I said my name is Leo. I've been with Zebra for 21 years now, working in various capacities in engineering and product management, and previously in sales. Have spent with Zebra and outside of Zebra, I guess the better part of 30 years working on printers.
Awesome. That's a lot of time and experience.
Absolutely. Yeah. He knows a little bit about printers.
A little bit,
so
which is good because
person.
We don't. Yeah. So we're going to rely
on
you.
Not as much about Leo as Leo does.
Exactly.
That's for sure.
I just know that, again, that it just prints out stuff.
You know? Right, right.
So next up, we have Christine Weber. Christine is the is in global marketing for supplies at Zebra. Christine, welcome to the show. Tell us a little bit about yourself also.
Yes, thanks for having me. So I've been with Zebra over 14 years, all in the supplies business. So quite a long time there, both in product management and marketing. And I've supported North America, Latin America, EMEA. So I kind of have a good perspective globally on the marketplace as well. And I'm an avid golfer now because of COVID, not having much more else to do, right? So that's become one of my passions.
Oh, that is awesome. Yeah. I love that. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm all about the outdoor activities. Hopefully you live somewhere where you can do that even during the winter.
No, unfortunately not.
Sorry to hear it, but
thanks.
I'm sure you'll find something else to keep you entertained for the next few months here.
Yeah, so. Right.
Well, as I mentioned, I want us to talk a little bit about the idea of navigating printer security and supplies. They're two kind of critical aspects of the print market that
absolutely.
I think our resellers might not think as much about or think are quite as important. It's, you know, one of those things like, hey, I know we need it to be secure, maybe. I know we need supplies, but, you know, we'll get to that. I'm just worried about selling printers.
Yeah, but so, there's much that needs to be talked about, and our resellers really got to understand that so that they can communicate the message on to their end users, right? Yep. So anyway, yeah.
I agree.
Yeah.
So I kind of want to start off by talking about the complexity of the modern printer, and Leo, maybe you can kind of help us kick this off a little bit here. There was an interesting quote I came across when I was kind of doing a little bit of research for this. Came from CSO Online, which is all about, you know,
Security,
exactly. Exactly, and the folks that work in security. And the quote from this article, which is about printers are an overlooked security risk for the enterprise, says, what is a printer exactly? Which seems like, duh, but there's a great response they give here. In the same way that the word phone now means a pocket supercomputer and tracking device that happens to also let you make voice calls. Right?
Right, yes.
The word printer today means a fax machine, copier, web server, email server, FTP server with a gigabit internet connection, Ethernet connection, rather, into the most sensitive parts of your office network that stores previously printed sensitive documents on an internal hard drive for basically forever until your MPS junks the printer and someone finds your HIPAA data from your hospital on the unencrypted hard drive and raises a scandal. Oh, and it prints stuff.
Oh, yeah, and it prints.
Which I found that to be a
brilliant.
Very, very useful quote.
Yes,
and,
brilliant.
And granted, I know like a lot of our resellers deal with more of, you know, like printers as far as like label printers, receipt printers, maybe not the massive MFP type stuff.
Right, right.
But at the same time, those are still much more complicated devices than they were then. So Leo, talk to us a little bit about what you see as like the complexity of the modern printer.
I think you hit it on the head exactly. You know, when you think about printers, two things are true. The best day in someone's life is when they don't think about their printer. Right, people don't want to think about printers. They want to just do their job and be on their own. But they've become something other than a printer. We like to think of them as a computing device that prints, right? Kind of in line with what you said a second ago, or a network device that prints. And in that role, they've taken on this other responsibility, right? They've got to be a dependable printer. They've got to work for a long time. They've got to deliver great output and do it quickly. But they also have a new responsibility. And that responsibility is being a good network citizen, which means not just connecting to the network, but taking on a level of responsibility for making sure that you're protecting the network, just as you would think of any endpoint device on the network. Could be a printer, could be a copier, could be a phone, as you mentioned, you know, could be any much device that's got a membership on your network or residency on your network has a new responsibility now, and that's to help protect the enterprise.
Right.
And I think everybody knows at this point that all the other devices need to be secure. We all know, like, hey, my laptop needs to have antivirus software and be protected from the internet and have firewalls. Mm-hmm. To your point, I get that, like, various machines need to be connected. But I don't think people think about that a lot with printers.
I don't think that at all. I think that's part of the struggle that Leo unfortunately lives every single day, which is, okay, I would imagine most of our resellers understand right. that, you know, these are endpoint devices. They are a security risk. But many, many end users, if they don't have, you know, whatever, sophisticated IT department, they don't realize the security risk or just what it means to have a printer on their network and the fact that it is an edge or an endpoint device. I mean, it's an issue. Exactly. And they just don't think of it like that. They think of it more like, oh, it's just a printer.
Right.
Well, it just prints. That's
just a device that does something.
Yeah. And the days that it doesn't print, okay, that's an issue. But they don't even know the nefarious things that can happen behind the scenes. So part of the issue here is the education of the end users.
Right. Yeah. Well, then, Leo, talk to that. You know, why aren't printers as secure as other network devices? Why do we kind of ignore this? And, you know, where's the gap happening here?
Well, the gap really lives in two places, we would say. One is just making the IT folks aware that a printer is on the network and it's a security risk. Part of that, or can be a security risk, part of that has to do with the way printers are purchased, right? So a lot of devices, let's say your computers, for example, your phones, they kind of go through a centralized purchasing location. But printers sometimes are bought based on need. I need a printer over here, I need a printer over there. And so they're bought sometimes at an independent department level. So there's not necessarily a lot of communication that goes on with IT to say, hey, I'm sticking another device on the network. What's our best practices around securing that? The other side of that is operations. So ops folks just want things to work efficiently, work all the time, you know, almost be independent and invisible and work. So you've got to get past the concern for the op folks that security is going to slow things down or impact the process or make things more difficult to do. And, you know, both of those things are easy to solve. It all starts with assessment. You have to look at those endpoint devices like a printer and say, okay, does this represent risk? Is there something in the way it's set up or something in the way it's configured or used that maybe represents a risk to your organization? Happy news is companies like Zebra have put out tools to make it very simple. So, you know, simply tap the side of the printer with a phone, run an assessment tool, and look at that device and say, okay, where are the potential security risks on those and how I mitigate them? And that's part two, looking at best practices and saying, okay, what are the best practices of my organization? What are the best practices that device manufacturer is putting out? And how do we align that printer with our best practices to make sure that it's actually adhering to those best practices? And the last one's a little bit of a commitment. And that's around maintaining security. You put a device, any device on the network, and it's going to be there for a long time. Our printers are very, very rugged and they last for a long time. Mm-hmm. But over time, new security threats emerge. So that's where device management comes into play. Really critical that when you've got any device on the network, printer or anything else, you've got a way to manage it. Because as use cases change, as processes change, as new security threats unfortunately can emerge, you want a way to reach out and touch those things and bring them into compliance with those new standards. So that's really it. It's all about assessment. It's all about mitigation and control of that device and then ongoing management of it to make sure that it's safe through time and it's being a good network citizen.
All right, Leo, I'm going to confess. I am one of those people that brought in a rogue computer, a rogue printer at some point in my life into the office, you know, flummoxed the IT department, label printer, you know, it's just too far down, whatever, down the way. We need one here that's a little bit more local. Happens all the time. And I think that, you know, from a reseller standpoint, that's probably one of the best use cases because you walk into any end user with that story and everybody's going to nod their head. Yep, we know somebody that has brought in I'll just call it again, a rogue printer, you know, that wasn't sanctioned by the officially by the IT department.
Right.
And that's how this can start. But that's really interesting. Yeah. And I'm with you on the maintenance where you were on the end there. You know, so often companies will put in, you know, align the unit with their security protocol and they get it all set up and it's all nice and running. But that's not where it stops. You can't stop there. And in fact, in security, you really can't stop there because there's nefarious things that are going on all the time. People are figuring out new and better ways to get into your network. You can't just stop. You got to maintain that.
Yeah, definitely.
Security, you know, it's not just a destination, it's a journey. And it's kind of an ongoing journey. And don't worry, if you connected that rogue printer, time counseling, you'll be okay. It's okay. I still love you. You know, one of the things that we see all the time, and this one always surprises folks to hear, but one of the big questions we get from our own user community is, how many printers do I have? Now, when you think about it, that's kind of a strange question, right? You think that they would know, but it's right. Exactly what you just talked about. People place devices on the network with very good intent, no bad intent at all. And so having tools that can go out and do discovery and look at the network and identify where those devices are by subnet or by location, critical tool, absolutely critical. And it's something that you want to look for help with from your reseller partners and from your technology providers to be able to do that discovery and that just simple census.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Well, you know, let's talk about then the breaches themselves when something does go wrong. How do those breaches occur with printers and what can happen when they do occur?
So the number one thing that we see with any kind of endpoint device, not just printers, is we love our endpoint devices because they can do a million different things, right? They become, as I said, they become compute devices that can do whatever their task is and then five other tasks too. What that means though, is that they typically have a lot of services turned on. So that's one of the first assessment things you want to do is look at all the services, like network services that are turned on and say, am I using that? So I'll go a little beanie propeller hat for a second here. Something like FTP, file transfer protocol, been on technology devices and network devices for years and years. And if you're using it, great, leave it on. Make sure that you're changing the passwords, make sure that you're monitoring it correctly. But if you're not using it, turn it off. And that's the number one thing we see is that people really need to assess the services, the features that are turned on, and then turn them off. The other one is, it's an old one, we've all heard it every time, change your default passwords. Change your passwords, rotate your passwords. If you're running wireless technologies, have obviously security turned on. Very few people run it open, but if you don't have security turned on, turn it on. And then rotate those pass keys, rotate those certificates on those devices with some regularity so that you're flummoxing anybody who's trying to attack those devices. So those are the big things. Make sure that you're really assessing the services on it and that you're turning off the things that you don't use. Make sure that you're turning off defaults wherever it's possible, changing passwords, and then have a management plan to rotate the setup on that device aligned with all the other devices in your network. So you've got that thing not just secure, but continuously adapting to be secure. And then there's one more I'll add at the end, and that is lock it down where you can, right? It's just like our houses. Lock the windows, lock the doors, you know, have a good security plan for your own environment. Have a good security plan for your devices. So where you can, go ahead and lock them down. I'll give you the example that we see all the time. We call them the happy clickers. These are people at the production line and the end line who, again, they always have good intent, right? And they'll go in and adjust the settings on the device with good intent, trying to dial something in. If they don't really need that access, turn that access off. It's great for the person who's setting up the device as it comes in, like a printer or any other device. But if the line operators don't need to have that access, turn it off. Shut down the happy clickers. Don't let them throw your production line off just because they are just trying to mess around with the front panel, for example.
Right. Happy clickers. I like that term.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of good. Let's unpack some of what Leo talked about there a little bit, because breaches do occur. And obviously, since printers are endpoint devices, they can be complicit in making that happen. But I like where you're going first there, Leo, is turn off the services or assess the services that are running on the device and turn those off. I mean, it seems like such a 101 type of a step, but it's really necessary. And I do believe that resellers, when they have that in mind, the good and with the good intent of wanting to help their customers understand the risk that's involved by having some of these services that are on. And if you're not utilizing them, there's really no reason for them to be on and lock it down. I think that's really good advice. And that's where the value-added reseller really can add value here, right, is that working in conjunction with that end user, whether it's their IT department, if they don't have one, you know, whoever the stakeholders are that own security on that network, these are positive things that are really at the end of the road going to happen, because breaches can happen. And what can occur? Really bad things can occur, yeah, right? If you get, if the tunnel in, and I don't know if you get into ports and stuff like that, Leo, I guess that would be another thing to sniff and make sure that what ports are turned on and not. I mean, once somebody's in to your network, and there's just so much that can go wrong.
Yeah.
There. No. So, yeah.
We believe it's really trying to lean in on this one, you know, on security. That's, we have a procedure, a set of features around the printers called Print Secure. And we're leaning into this really heavily because it's a big consultancy opportunity for the reseller community.
Yes.
I'll give you a good example. And it's, you know, we've all heard about these things. We've all heard about ransomware attacks. So we've never seen any kind of ransomware attack coming through the Zebra products, obviously, but they do happen to companies, unfortunately. And we've had a couple cases where we've had customers who have seen ransomware attacks happening in their company. And the question there is, you know, first off, you got to take action right away, right? And that action is you got to unfortunately go work with the folks who are hosting that attack or mounting that attack. But in the background, you have to do another thing. You've got to go to all of your devices in your environment and make sure they're secure. Because you don't want to solve that ransom attack and then just open yourself up to another one. And so that's where it's a really big opportunity. That's where things like the NIST standards that we adhere to become very helpful, because it gives you a framework to say, okay, here's how we assess, here's how we mitigate, here's how we maintain, here's how we help you recover in the event of an attack. And customers, end user community, we're finding is not just happy, but very grateful for the partners who can walk in and say, okay, I'm, you know, I was here with you at the sale, but I'm here with you for the long run, helping you mitigate this ongoing world of security.
Yep, I agree wholeheartedly. Yep. Really, really good advice there, because I think those are actionable things that most resellers should be able to do with very little lift on their side. Mm-hmm. But the value add that they're bringing to the table, much, much higher.
Yep, yeah. It's all about that value. About that value.
It's huge. And I would say my big advice to the reseller community is security can sound scary, and it doesn't have to be. There's really good documentation out there. There's really good tools out there, like the Security Assessment Wizard, the management tools, documentation that responsible companies like Zebra are putting out to help you through that process. You're not going to have to learn super arcane, crazy stuff that is not useful, maybe in other parts of your life, or that you don't want to learn. There's good content out there to start being a thought leader and an expert and a consultant on security. It's not that hard to get into.
Well, you've already kind of mentioned briefly a couple of things Zebra does, like your Print Secure. You know, tell us, you know, is there anything in particular Zebra does that's very different from the rest of the market where you're tackling printer security that you think that people could really work with you on?
I think it's really, and this is not just a printer comment, this is all of Zebra comment. I think that we're just being extremely proactive about this. We're really leaning in really hard to say we know security is part of connected device life. And so we're putting out tools and features and capabilities, the LifeGuard system on the mobile computers, the Print Secure features on the printers and so on. All of those are our way of saying, you know, we're here. We get this. We're involved. We're a connected product company. And so I think the difference between that I've observed between Zebra and competitors is that willingness to just be really proactive and really act as a consultant for the reseller community and when needed, in participation with the resellers for the end user community to just be proactive about this. We don't be scared. We can all get there. It's just a case of leaning in and participating and helping people mitigate the issues when they come up. Really, before they come up is better.
Yeah, no doubt.
No, and I agree with that because to your point, there is some kind of mystique around security, I think, that a lot of resellers feel like, I don't know, maybe that's just too complicated for me to get into, maybe too much risk involved, those types of things. But I think that when you look at like the Print Secure software package and what just the ease of use from a reseller perspective, and how you can now add that to your value add. It's there. You really shouldn't be afraid of that at this point in time. I mean, you've got smart people behind you, on the vendor side. Go ahead, Leo.
There's a saying in security circles: security that's not easy to use is not used.
There you go. Right.
That's it. And it's not that terribly hard to take a position and help customers with this. And that's again where I think Zebra's making a really big difference is being proactive about this, and documenting the issues, documenting the tools, putting out that documentation in public. You know, all of the tools we put out around LifeGuard and PrintSecure, that's all online and accessible. And more than that, I think this is also really important. You guys kind of mentioned a second ago, having staff on hand, having folks that we've hired, that we've trained, who are responsible for security. We have all the way up to the C level at Zebra, folks whose job it is to help our user community with security. And to me, that's, I'll be candid, that's something I'm really proud of Zebra for doing, because you know that means we're really leaning in and being serious about being proactive about this.
Yeah. And it matches up with the life cycle of the unit itself. I mean, you know, all the way through assessment to, you know, setting up the devices, the utility to set it up, all the way on to the ongoing management. I mean, there's opportunities. And how many times have we said, you know, bringing up recurring revenue or managed service opportunities? Here's one of those opportunities where you can provide that as a reseller to the end users. And there's meaning here, because, you know, bad things can happen when it's not set up correctly. But there's opportunity there as well. Maybe that's a good segue into some of the other opportunities you can get into
perfectly,
printers.
Yeah.
Right?
So yeah. So let's let Christine jump in and shine here for a little bit. So, you know, obviously, you know, security is one thing, but I think the other piece sometimes that people don't think enough about when it comes to printers
is
the supplies
and
the media.
Yeah.
They know you need it. You know, stuff's got to print on something. But I just don't think everyone gives that enough thought. And to your point, don't understand how it can become a huge important part of your business, because you can only sell that printer once.
Right.
But you can sell a lifetime's worth of supplies if they stick with it.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So, Christine, I'll let you jump in here. You know, briefly describe the types of media that are out there. And I'm sure you could probably go on forever on types of media, but tell us some of the basics that people should know about and should be thinking and talking about.
Yeah, so that's a very good question. And there is a lot that I could talk about for hours on this. I mean, it first starts out with, you know, the basics of the delivery, right? Whether it's a label, it's a tag, something that doesn't have adhesive, receipt paper, wristbands, and then the thermal ribbons. And then all of that, you know, from a market perspective, there's thousands of those materials in the marketplace. And that's where things get a little bit complicated, because they all have a little bit of different performance characteristics to them. You know, there's the paper labels, which, you know, meet a wide variety of solutions, but customers always have some unique needs, even around paper labels, unlike synthetic labels, which are going to work for more higher durability applications, where you're going to run into and need smear scratch resistance or chemical resistance, resistant to outdoors. We have labels that will last 10 years outdoors after they've been printed. So, and adhesives are another really important thing when talking about labels. What types of adhesives? I think we've all, you know, had some tape or a label and we put it on, you know, cardboard, and it sticks differently than when we put it on something that's plastic. And we're like, why isn't it sticking as well?
Right. Yeah.
There's chemistry behind all of this, believe it or not. And, you know, different surface energies don't react to adhesives the same way, as well as the, you know, the actual surface itself, if it's curved or cold or dirty. And so all these thousands of materials, you have to end up coming up with the right face sheet, the right adhesive. And then two, thinking about the printer, especially if you're going to do, you know, print and apply type of application, then you need to start worrying about the liner on top of it. So there's a lot to think about. We don't expect any of our resellers to be experts. We are definitely the experts. It's really about them gathering the right information so we can, you know, provide them with the right recommendation for the application. Because not all labels are the same, and people will all the time say, well, it's just a paper label. It all, you know, acts the same way, but it doesn't. And it's especially challenging as well with direct thermal, because the different direct thermal materials in the market all have a different sensitivity to that heat from the printhead. So if 1 week you're buying from supplier A, you know, you have your printer heat setting set up a certain way to work, but then you buy from supplier B, you get that in and now it's printing really light. Now you need someone to go fix that because it's going to stop your operation.
Yeah, absolutely. And I like where you're going there, Kristen, because, you know, as every reseller should think of themselves as a solution provider. I mean, I know that we've preached that a lot. And I know that some of them, and to Kristen's point, you know, some of them, they're not going to know the vast universe of what's available out there in supplies or labels or paper, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, but that shouldn't be a scary point. What needs to happen is that, you know, you're a solution provider. You can lean on experts. And I don't know anybody better in the industry than Zebra and providing the type of support around labeling and the consumables. So I'll just put it that way.
Right.
You know, there's a network of people, even at Blue Star, we have folks as well. There's all kinds of resources you can lean on to get the right solution, which is absolutely critical because at the end of the road, you've got this solution that you're putting, okay, we've got the printer, it's plugged in and all that good stuff. But if we don't have the right supplies and we're not using the right, supplies at the end of the road, bad things are going to happen, as Kristen said. Yep, so, yep, but yep. No reason not to get into that, not to be knowledgeable about it.
Totally. Well, then I guess kind of my next question, you know, we've talked about all these different potential options and things to think about, but how do you ultimately decide that? Like if someone's coming to you and your team and saying, hey, we know we need these supplies. We got a customer maybe we're working with here, but we don't really know where to go. You know, where do you kick that conversation off? How do you help them decide?
Yeah, so it's really us understanding the application. And normally we tell our resellers to remember the acronym PRESS, right? Which stands for printer, resistance, environment, surface, and size. You get that key information and maybe a little bit of other insights, potentially, depending if the application is particularly unique. And we can help you figure that out. You know, the printer to make sure that we're delivering it to you in the right size, right? And going to quote it to you in the right size. Resistance is really important because it also kind of feeds into how long does a label need to last. You know, paper label is good for probably up to a year if it's just in indoor conditions for the most part. But if you then go outdoors or you want multiple years, then you need to probably look at a synthetic as well, as synthetics are really important for, you know, like I said, chemical resistance or scratch resistance. You know, there's all sorts of things. And then two, even, you know, back again to that surface piece, which actually I'm skipping ahead a little bit, before, you know, environment is indoor, outdoor, right? Surface is then, you know, those curved surfaces, the labels tend to, you know, flag up a little bit from those surfaces if the actual material is not flexible enough and it doesn't have what we a lot of times refer to as a mandrel adhesive that will bond to it. And just like surface complications could be, you know, labeling something that's powder coated metal is going to be harder to label because of those ridges and the adhesive getting into the ridges, just the same as, you know, there's a plastic tote that's, you know, has a shiny surface and one that has more of an embossed surface on it. The label isn't going to stick as well to that embossed surface. So we also need to understand, like, not, you know, if they're labeling multiple different types of packaging or items, because we want to get hopefully one solution that will work on all surfaces potentially, instead of having to have them buy different labels for different surfaces if that's what their product is. So, you know, the more information we can get, that also helps. And then two, another thing is understanding the customer's workflow. In manufacturing, we see a lot of usage of label sets where there's multiple labels in one label and there's different size labels, and we kind of cut those labels so that they can be applied at different parts of the process. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so part of it is also making a label that's going to work for, you know, thinking about how the customer has everything staged in their operations and where should that label be printed and where should it be applied are also important considerations in determining whether you should have a label set and print in one area or print different labels at different stages throughout the process. So that's also important to understand. And I think a lot of it is, you know, we see such weird scenarios from customers where you know, customers doing manual processes with their labels because they're not working, like putting tape over them to make them stick or using glue. Like, and I'm like, wow, how long does that take to do those things? Or with RFID, we've actually seen customers for labeling of metal items, put labels on bags and then attach the bag to the metal asset because they can't get the readability on that metal asset because it's being blocked, right? Mm-hmm. So we want to eliminate those things for our customers. And by having a label that is right for the application eliminates all that extra work and all those extra steps that can free up workers and ensure that, you know, they're delivering to their KPIs appropriately.
And I'm going to go back to, you know, the fact that a solution provider, right, at the end of the road, they're trying to provide a solution. I got a real quick question for you, Christine. How much has the world of media and consumables advanced just in the last 15 years in substrates and stuff like that, right? I mean, it's advanced a lot, right? Different adhesives, different media. Right.
Even like the IQ color technology that we have, right, where you can print color on demand on a direct thermal label with using our invisible inks that we place down. Right. I mean, who would have thought of that? Or dissolvable label materials that we have that, you know, when they run against water, they'll dissolve into tiny fibers and go down the drain and won't clog drains and are easier to remove. So there's not a manual step and it won't leave any adhesive behind either. So there's so many intricacies to things that can be done.
Intricacies, yes, but there's solutions that are out there. You have to ask. I couldn't agree with you more because I think that, you know, the job of a solution provider is to be the one who's asking the questions on the front line. And then you have the resources like Christine and others behind you that can answer those questions so that when you have a use case where you need a dissolvable label that you may not know exists at all, but now you know what the use case is and what
your customer may not even know.
Right.
They might not have any idea they need that.
Well, right. I guess you could probably speak to that too, Christine, where you have a better understanding of what the use case is. And, oh, you know what? We should really go in this direction because here's a label or a material that's going to work better for your solution, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Awesome. Yeah. So, I mean, I think that's a critical part of it. And but again, that gets back to the whole value add of a reseller. Yep. That's where they can add values just to be able to do that. I guarantee you the world of materials, labeling, et cetera, has advanced. It continues to advance. I'll make a bold statement exponentially, but I mean, just different adhesive, different materials, lots of innovation is happening there that can cure a lot of the needs that are in the marketplace that are new needs that are being developed. I like where you're going, Christine, with the manufacturing, because it seems like every manufacturer is trying to outdo themselves on the cuteness of their packaging when it gets to the end user. And some of that has to be done through innovative labeling and stuff like that. So again, if you don't know what's out there, then you need to lean on partners like we have here that does understand what's going on into the ecosystem and can help you provide those solutions.
Yeah, big time. Yeah. I'm a big fan of the mnemonic device. I love press.
Yeah.
Printer, resistance, yes. Environment, surface, and size, right?
There you go.
It? Yeah. See, I've already got it. Like,
easy that to is, remember.
That's such a simple one. That is awesome. I'm a big fan of stuff like that. It's something, yes. If I were a reseller and wanted to talk about supplies, I'd have that in my head all the time. Like, hey, let's talk about your environment. Let's talk about your surface.
You know? Yes. Yes. Press on. Like press on.
Exactly. Yes. Press on. He's doing your marketing for you
there
now.
You go. So.
That's awesome. Love it.
All right. Well, listen, that does it for our main conversation. Before we go over to our recurring segments, I want to, as always, thank our founding members. Zebra, of course, is one of those. We appreciate your support. We couldn't do this podcast without you. Obviously, we wouldn't have great guests like this without you. As always, too, we want to tell our audience to connect with us however you can. First of all, if you get a chance, go rate and review us on Apple Podcasts.
5-star would be nice.
That's the only one you're allowed to.
Oh, that's right.
If you click anything else, it gets erased. Your phone gets erased. Sorry. So 5 stars. And leave us a review and ask us a question if you want, or just say something nice and we'll read it on air. If you say something mean, we probably won't. Maybe we will anyway, just to call you out.
Right, there you go.
You could also reach out to us to tell us, you know, what you think about printers or questions you might have. We're happy to relay those back to Leo and Christine. You can find us on Twitter at TechConnectPod. You can email us techconnect@bluestarinc.com. All right. Well, we want to wrap up, as always, with our two recurring segments.
Yes, sir.
The first is the value to the VAR. I feel like we've been touching on a lot of this as we go out, talking about value adds.
Well, we kicked it off by saying there's opportunity here,
exactly.
Right? Did we not?
Yeah. Yes. So I want to hone in on that opportunity with Christine and Leo. And Christine, I'll let you start here. You know, when you talk about supplies, what should VARs be talking to their customers about? What kind of questions should they have? How should they be approaching their customers about that supply conversation?
Well, it's really a consultative approach, right? When they, you know, engage with a customer, I think the first, you know, to start the conversation is to ask them and understand what their key performance indicators are, you know, in their organization. Are they having any challenges meeting any of those, and kind of honing in to see if there's a supplies challenge that's contributing to that? So as an example, we had a customer that had two regional distribution centers, one printing 96,000 labels every 8-hour shift, and the other one only printing 57,000 labels every 8-hour shift. And the one location's like, I don't know why we can't print anymore. We can't print any faster. And what we determined was that was what was happening. The location producing more was printing at 10 IPS. The other location was only printing at 6 IPS. And the reason why is because of the low quality media, and that they were printing thermal transfer, and that thermal transfer ribbon, number one, wasn't optimized to print at 10 IPS and also wasn't sticking well to the face sheet. And just by making a simple part number change, that customer could now print 96,000 labels a day, just like their other location. How simple is that? And they had an extra resource on that line trying to help push the orders through, because they still needed to ship the same amount, but the printer wasn't letting them do that. And it really wasn't the printer, it was the supplies.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, you know, a key thing to understand. And then, you know, back to press again, is really understanding the application and understanding what the workers are doing, like asking questions. Do you use anything else? So you apply the label to that. Does the label stick okay? Does it stay readable and scannable through its use? Do you ever have any of your customers who have specific labeling requirements come back and complain or issue you chargebacks because the labels either fell off or they're not readable when they receive them in their operations, and that impacts their operations? You know, and it's just also, again, understanding the processes. Where do you print? How are you, you know, in your process? And is that the right place to print? And, you know, do you need to combine labels into a label set? But it's really about walking through the application. Tell us what you do and how you do it. There are customers that we've talked to as well, where we've seen them batch printing hundreds of labels. And I have a picture of this too, because it's so crazy. And then they have a little decoder written on a little piece of paper of the yellow highlighter, a green highlighter, and a blue highlighter. And it says what that means on it. And then they actually have somebody who spends 2 hours every day highlighting labels after reading them. Huh. You know, so that's 40 hours a month. And so is that really the best way for the customer from a productivity perspective, when there are new innovations like IQ Color or even other ways in which we can solve that need for color? Because color is very important in operations, because it helps with routing of things correctly because of visual cues. You're going to see color, except for maybe Leo, some colors he can't see, which is why we also recommend symbols as well. But you're going to react to that color before you're going to be able to react to that text that's on there. So some of it is also psychological and thinking through the supply in more detail. We've also been able to provide solutions where a manufacturer of garbage disposals was having a lot of challenges when people were calling in for service because they couldn't find the serial number, right, on the back of that. Because when it was installed, the label was installed in the back, and you can't put your head under your sink and see it after that. Right. And so we developed a label that, you know, made it so that you could have a little pull-off tab so people could just reach back and pull it off. And from a business perspective, that reduced the amount of time for service calls, because they could get the serial number faster, get the customer serviced faster, and move on. Plus, it was just a better customer service experience. So understanding processes and challenges you know, across the board are really what you need to do. Just keep asking why or how. Mm-hmm. And see what you can articulate. Because the worst thing you can do is go into a customer and say, I want to quote you on your labels, because then it's just going to be a price conversation and it's going to be a tough road to sell that.
Absolutely. Well, first off, doesn't it sound like Christine could like have this whole library of memes that are like printer fails?
Yep.
You got to do
you
that.
Should. You should start a Twitter account for that. Yeah.
You 100% should, because I would follow that and I would scroll through and see all these hilarious use cases of how people are failing and, you know, and just workflows are failing when they could be so much easier.
Good time.
But yeah.
Well, I'll just say, I think the message to Vars here is that your customers probably have some kind of pain point around their printers and supplies.
Oh, yeah.
And what they're printing and how they're printing and why. I guarantee it. If you just went in and asked that question and said, hey, where are your pain points around supplies right now or printing or whatever it is, I guarantee you they would have a multitude of responses that you probably can help them find a solution to. You just need to ask.
100%. Right. No doubt about it.
Funny thing is most customers we find have been using the same labels for 5, 10, 15 years.
Right.
And they haven't looked at them. And some of them, you know, have color on them. And you ask them, why is there color on there? And they don't know, because it was an old process and they just keep buying the same label. Mm-hmm. So it's not something that gets looked at very often, even when like a WMS system is upgraded. We've had customers who upgrade their WMS and are using an 8-part polyester label, which is really expensive. And now, because of the new system, they only need to use 5 parts, but they keep still ordering that same label part number, and they're throwing away a third of that label. So if they're spending $100,000 on labels a year and they're throwing away a third of that label, they're throwing away $30,000 a year.
Yeah,
it's just like, incredible. Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, I think it gets back to the point that, you know, solution providers need to be in contact, need to have the conversation. I couldn't agree with you more, Christine, around that, because opportunities lie in the consumables, in the media, not just in, and I love the fact what you said, you can't walk. We all know why resellers would walk in the door and say, I want to sell you labels, you know, or get into that conversation, because at the end of the road, they're trying to make it sticky, which is, I hope, what they're trying to do, make the account sticky so that literally sticky in the sense that they keep buying more from you, not just an adhesive that's on the back of a label in this instance, but you know, make the account sticky, but you gotta be that ongoing consultant too. Definitely. Around that, because things change, you know. Hey, Blue Star just put in a new WMS too as well. I guarantee you we made some changes to some of the labeling practicing or haven't, but anyway.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All right, well then let's shift over to Leo, and same question, but about security. You know, how should VARs be talking about their customers? How do they approach the security conversation?
Well, I really like the way that Christine framed it up there. And I think this is true with security too. You want to make use of that relationship you've got with that customer to look at their processes, to offer thought leadership around how to implement security. You know, that's basically the equation.
Yeah.
Look at where their pain points are. Look at what their IT folks, security folks are worried about. Look importantly at where their ops folks are also concerned about, and apply the tools that we have to help people drive that conversation. And I'd say two other things. One, don't be afraid to have the security conversation. Your end users are ready. They're coming to Zebra, we know. They want to talk to experts. They want to have domain knowledge. The knowledge is out there. So don't be afraid to start those conversations. And you can use tools like the ROI calculator we have around security online to really boil this down to numbers. You know, security breaches have a cost. And so that's a great tool for really looking at, you know, what's the possible cost of having a security breach in terms of downtime and impact and diversion of labor to things other than making your product and shipping your product. So Christine, I hats off. I really like the way you said it. Use that insight knowledge that the reseller is going to have with that customer to apply a solution that's going to really deliver value to that customer.
Yep. Definitely. Do you have anything else to add?
Nope.
I feel like we've covered everything
I
could
think
say.
We
about
have.
It.
Yeah. Yes, sir.
Bottom
yes.
line is just go in and ask some questions.
Right. Yeah.
Talk about this stuff.
Be the solution provider.
You will find an opportunity to provide a solution and provide some value add.
And don't be afraid. Don't be afraid of the security, and don't be afraid of the supplies conversation. There are opportunities and both, for crying out loud.
And as always, don't be afraid to say, okay, thanks for telling me this. I don't know for sure right now, but I have experts over at Zebra or wherever.
Yeah, I'm going
to
call Leo and Christine.
Yeah, exactly. That will give us those answers. So, all right, well, let's wrap it up with our favorite segment of every week, What's Tech Connecting With You? This is where we get a chance to talk about a piece of technology, innovation, software, show, whatever, something in the world of tech that has caught our attention and has us excited and interested right now. Leo, I'll start with you. What is tech connecting with you right now?
Oh, that one's easy for me. It's 5G. 5G is coming into our lives. It's going to change the way that we use our phones. It's going to change the way that our houses are connected, our cars are connected. It's just going to make a huge change. It'll take some time to roll out in the States, particularly, but the speed, the dependability, the coverage that's coming, it's just going to change the way we interact with the internet. And I think the way we interact with each other in many ways. So that's it for me. It's 5G.
All right. A couple follow-ups there, Leo. Have you experienced 5G yet? I have not. Have you?
I have. And, you've seen the commercial where the person is like, it feels exactly like that. It's amazing. if you remember the first time you had a cell phone years ago, the first time you had, let's say, like LTE 4G technology, it's that on a much bigger level. When you see the experience and kind of the way it will change the way you interact with devices, I will tell you, my wife is happy because I've stopped buying technology for my house for a little bit until I can 5G up the house. But then I'm going to go whole hog when it's all in place. So yeah, it makes a big difference.
So I know this isn't your world of expertise. I'm treating you like you're a 5G expert now all of a sudden, but
you must be.
Yeah. But when do you think, here's the ultimate test to me. When will I be able to be on 5G when I'm driving from my house in Cincinnati to, let's say, on vacation up 75 to Michigan and have 5G the whole way? Are we 3, 4, 5 years away from that? A decade away from that? What do you think?
Oh yeah, not a decade. No, I think you're in like a 3-year time span personally. Okay. From if you get full on geek on this one, if you put on the BD propeller hat all the way, as some of us do, and you go out and you look at where the towers are being put up and how the carriers are assembling their systems, I think definitely closer than most people maybe assume. The big challenge is going to be getting out the devices that support 5G.
Yeah. All right.
But happily, at this point, all the cell phone providers have taught us, right?
Yes, exactly.
Keep getting a new one all the time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Fair enough.
All right, Christine, what about you? What's tech connecting with you right now?
Well, I think it's mainly around our Temptime acquisition, because prior to COVID, I got to go out and meet with that team and learn about the technology that they've created and have access to from a chemical sensing perspective. I mean, we have chemists now that we employ.
Cool. Yeah.
And I mean, things that I didn't know and I still don't quite understand them yet. I'm sure I will in the next year or two. But I think the what that kind of opens up for us in the future is pretty interesting and exciting, and what we can do with that. And we're exploring those things at this point, but it's all around sensing and indicating environmental factors. Mm-hmm. So that's what's got me intrigued, especially close to our business, because it's much different space for us.
Yeah, alchemy. Just mm-hmm. the chemistry. It's a fascinating field. It really is. Lots of cool stuff happening there. I think we've touched on some on what's going on there. Yeah, really cool stuff, no doubt.
All right, Dean, what's tech connecting with you right now?
Are you looking for your next worry?
Not really.
That you need to worry about.
I think we've got enough.
Is there enough in 2020? I'm going to give you one.
Can't you
more.
Save this for next year?
No, I can't. I'm just going to pile on
might
here
as well.
In 2020.
Let's get it all over with.
Might as well. As if it hasn't been enough, here's your next worry.
Okay.
Dry ice storage. So what's tech connecting with me is that, dry ice, it's needed. It's needed to cool medicine for transportation. So I first saw it come up when the COVID vaccine does start to get rolled out. It needs to stay at a ridiculously cold, I forget what it is. It's like negative something, negative 30, negative 40, something like that. Well, the only way you can do that and transport it is through dry ice. That's how that's done. Okay, but unfortunately, there's a dry ice shortage right now. Why? Well, it's also COVID related, as it turns out. The main source of dry ice is CO2 production, which is actually a byproduct of creating ethanol. So ethanol is used in gas, right? We're not driving as much. Can 2020 get any worse? More piling on? We just can't win. So we're driving less, which means we're not producing as much ethanol, which means we don't have as much CO2 production going on, which means now there's a dry ice shortage. Boom.
Oh, boy.
Can 2020 get any worse?
Wasn't the whole fact that we're not driving supposed to be a good thing?
Right?
Like,
right.
Hey, we're not polluting as much as we usually do.
And we're all like cheering, yes, the sky
but
is clear.
But it also means you may not get your vaccine on time.
Darn.
You can't win, folks.
You can't win.
Or maybe even your food delivery, right? Because I'm sure a lot of those kits are sent in dry ice as well. And some people receive medications that way because their medications sent to the home. So,
I mean, I saw that. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is connecting with me in a really bad way, in the sense that, oh, we need more dry ice. So I'm going to go drive my ethanol car, I guess. Do my part.
There's the lesson. Everybody get in their cars, turn it on tonight, rev them up for like an hour or so. We need some more ethanol.
All right. What's tech connecting with you?
Thanks, Dean. I'm just going to bring us down a little bit more.
Okay, fair enough.
I want to give a bit of a shout out and an in memoriam to Alex Trebek.
Oh, yeah.
How do we not talk about one of the geniuses and icons of pop culture? And
no doubt.
You know, you're connected to the world of technology, too. Like, I mean,
yes.
I imagine if you're someone who's into technology, you're probably kind of a nerdy person.
Yeah.
Probably you're
right.
Big into trivia.
Yes.
And just knowing stuff.
Who hasn't watched Jeopardy
exactly.
for a little while?
At some point in your life, Jeopardy is probably part of it. I mean, I know I went through long phases where, like, I never missed an episode.
Right.
When I started working out at the beginning of the pandemic at home, or was finally myself on the elliptical a lot more. I was watching a lot of Jeopardy. I'm glad I started watching a lot more this year, you know, in the last year of his life. And, I know they said, I think Sony said they have enough episodes to get us through Christmas with him at this point. I'm going to make an effort to start watching more of them. The man has just been an amazing talent. He's always like been like the smartest guy on TV for the longest time.
Yes.
And can make you feel smart. Like, you know, I don't care how smart you are, or don't think you are, or how much you think you do or don't know. Everybody at some point watches Jeopardy and gets some questions right, and for a moment you feel brilliant, you know? Especially if the contestants don't.
Right,
know?
Yes, yes.
So a lot of admiration I've always had for Alex.
That's a really good one, because not only that, but what a great guy.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, just... You know, just a great human being and such a class act, just through and through. I mean, truly.
The fact that he literally worked all the way up to his death and probably still loved every second of it. I'm sure he had to go through a lot of, you know, tough stuff in fighting cancer over the last couple of years.
Pancreatic cancer, I can only imagine. Yeah.
But, you know, every time he appeared on screen, he still was the same calm, comforting presence that you always had every
week. There you
go.
Our homage to, somebody that all geeks love.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, there we go. We got some,
go.
We got
Thanks,
some music
Marco.
Queuing up. Thank you very much. All right. Well, listen, that does it for us. I want to thank Leo and Christine. Thank you both so much for being on the show today. We couldn't do this without you. It's been a very insightful conversation. Hey, I want to let our listeners know Thanksgiving's coming up next week, for at least for those of us here in the U.S.
Yep.
We are actually going to take a week off the podcast. We have not done that since June.
Exactly.
So we're going to take a week off next week. And when we come back in December, we have some fun stuff to finish out the year. We're going to do three fun, lighthearted, not so heavily embedded in our channel type episodes. So if you only maybe checked out certain episodes because you liked certain topics, or, you know, I'm going to go out there and promote this to anybody, we got some fun stuff to talk about. Some of it still will revolve around the world of technology. We're not getting away from that.
It's just good stuff. We need some lighthearted stuff at the end of this year.
Come on. So I encourage you to come back in December, check out our episodes. You're going to find some fun stuff. But it is time for us to unplug again. Thanks so much to our guests. And until next time, stay connected. Looking for new opportunities to find steady revenue and increase margins in trying times? Don't overlook selling barcode printing supplies. From printer ribbons to labels, custom tags, receipts, or cards, supplies and media could be an untapped path to opportunity. To help you understand where to start, Zebra has created an ebook called Printer Media and Consumables: Why You Should Sell It and How to Do It Right. You can download it by going to vartechnation.com and searching for the word media, or check the show notes for a link. Across industries, Zebra scanners see more, powering businesses to see more as well. Easy to read barcodes are, in reality, a rarity. From warehouses to stores and in hospitals, Zebra scanners can read challenging barcodes, ensuring productivity, efficiency, customer satisfaction, and patient safety. The What Can You See campaign includes marketing and sales enablement, like a scanner selector tool and flyers that will help you and your customers see Zebra barcode scanners in a whole new light. To learn more, check out the link in the show notes or visit Zebra's microsite on bluestarinc.com.